So Young Hearts is a mentorship program designed to help children overcome the grief of losing a parent. And we believe that bereaved children in our community, deserve to have a safe place to grieve through peer support, mentorship, and connection to make a difference in the lives of many children.
That was my guest on today's show, Danielle Chesney, who is the founder and president of Young Hearts Kentucky. And this is part two of our discussion. And Danielle is a former student, and she has turned her own personal tragedy of losing her mother as a teen into an organization to serve children who have lost a parent. So stay tuned. This is part two. We'll be right back after this message.
Into Relationships and You, hosted by Toby Jenkins, a licensed marriage and family therapist serving Central Kentucky. Each week, Toby will bring you a show with a topic related to mental health, relationships, or self-improvement. The name of the show, Paradigm, comes from that moment in the therapy process when a profound shift in perspective happens for a client, an epiphany, sometimes accompanied by physical reaction that leads them to look at things differently and make significant steps towards improving and enriching their lives.
We are back. You are listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. Today, we're touching on a really tough topic, which is losing a parent as a child. My guest is Danielle Chesney. She's the founder of Young Hearts Kentucky, and she lost her mother to breast cancer as a 13-year-old in the eighth grader. I lose track of what, okay.
Ninth grade.
So yeah. So, you know, we were talking about before the break, there's definitely a role for various forms of support. Because like you talked about this key moment when your mother's diagnosis became terminal, that would have been a great place for intervention, not just for you, but for your whole family, the whole system, which is typically absent. And you alluded to, being angry after and acting out after. And that too, or then would have been a good time for intervention. And so these losses can be extremely complicated, extremely difficult, and especially when everybody's grieving and the grief process is not, it's bad enough when you're grieving alone and it's not linear, but then when you're grieving with others that are also grieving and you're all in different parts of the grieving cycle. And so, the anger that you talked about, I have also seen, and that shows up in acting out. I've also seen OCD. And so if in OCD, meaning, and one way I like to think about OCD, especially when you've had a loss or a survivor of trauma and you haven't had control, OCD can show up as a method of control. So whether it's hand washing, checking locks over and over again, it can show up. Everything has to be in its place. I mean, there's a whole list of OCD behaviors. And so I guess I want to emphasize out of that, if you're in a position or a situation with loved ones, especially children, that there are multiple points where getting professional help is definitely a must. And so so these behavioral things, it's a natural outcome of the grieving process, especially when it's unprocessed or there's no help going through it. So outside of anger for you, what were some of the other biggies as a teenager?
think, you know, for me, I have always been a sensitive child. And I think, and I believe that when my mom passed away, that sensitivity, you know, grew even more. I was very sensitive to what was around me. And even just the slightest mention of my mom's name or her passing, anything that was related to her or loss or sadness just brought me into an emotional state. And it was behavior, you know, the behavior started, you know, the behavioral issues started significantly after my mom's passing. And I can remember just not having my mother around for guidance and support, and her love and what she brought into this world, I felt lost. And I am certain that most children who experience this will go through a period of time where that is their way of expressing grief. That is their way of processing their loss of their parent, and or parents even. And so whatever that looks like to a child is how they are processing. And I really want to touch on that, because it's okay that a child is acting out in a certain way. That is their way of grieving. And they're going through what any, you know, person, an adult would, you know, but they're children. And so I started to see a lot of, you know, behavioral issues throughout high school, significantly.
You know, one of the people I know that also lost a parent fairly young is my dad. And my, if you met my dad, I would say, so he's 75 now. And anytime we get together, he's become way more talkative, and he tends to recycle some of the same stories. So I've heard a lot of these stories several times, especially in the last 10 years. But one of them in particular is he too was angry. And if you met him now, you'd say, man, there's no way this man had a hair trigger anger button, because he's so chill and laid back. But he tells stories of like being a teenager, and if anybody said anything, he was quick. And it wasn't until later that he connected the dots. And so now I didn't have the language or the kind of the framing for it until fairly recently, but it's that sense of abandonment that
absolutely.
And so we tend to think of abandonment as it has to be a voluntary thing. This person and purposely left me. But abandonment can happen, and often happens, when the leaving is involuntary. And that's kind of the thing, at least for my dad. I put those things together after, you know, going into therapy. But not only that, so I think I used the example of earlier that sometimes the other parent leaves too. So you've got double abandonment. And that was the situation with my dad. Essentially, his father passed away. My grandmother, shortly after that, basically had her brother raise my dad and a couple of his siblings, along with their bunch of kids. So he was an outsider with that family. And my grandmother, and this is kind of the thing you did in the 50s and 60s in South Carolina, she went to New York to be like a housekeeper and maid. And that was a common, she left him and went to New York. She left him and two of his siblings to be raised by her brother and his wife. And there's way more I could tell you tell you about that. But I have kind of faint memories of my dad losing it as a kid. And I didn't put the dots together for that until much later. And he's like, oh yeah, I did that. Yeah. And he had to do a lot of work on himself as an adult. And if you met him, if you ever talked to him, you'd say, yeah, there's no way. He's the most chill. And he's always been that way, just super calm, laid back. But that hasn't always been his story. So my dad could have used some intervention.
I think we could all use some intervention, all of us. Every single person.
Yes. And so, you know, the other part too, is that there are also a lot of variables in how children lose their parents. And so your loss of your mother was through a battle of disease. Some of the other things I see are like accidents, like the one I described with my daughter's classmate back in elementary school, people taking their own lives, and people dying suddenly of many various ways. And so all of those present different opportunities or have, you know, different setup for intervention, but also complicates the loss. And
it does.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you touch on your dad's experience with anger and the surviving parent. What I want to refer is, you know, checking out. And, you know, with anger specifically, I think that anger is very normal and it can come out at different periods in one's life. It could be right after, it could be years later, it could be, you know, in the middle of or before the passing. I mean, there's different times for that. But, you know, my dad really did what he could. And, but with the checking out, what I mean with that is just not emotionally there and, you know, focused on work and very focused on that, which is, and I'm sure you have studied this, that men tend to use work as an outlet, something to focus on. And
absolutely. I'm
sure you understand that.
Yeah. That just kind of goes into the different ways that we grieve the same loss. And it can be super, super complicated. But we'll talk more about systems of support and the prevalence of children who lose parents when we come back after the break. You're listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. I'm your host, Toby Jenkins. And today, my guest is a former student, Danielle Chesney. We'll be right back.
This is Toby Jenkins, founder of Jenkins Couples and Family Therapy and host of Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. Jenkins Couples and Family Therapy is a proud sponsor and supporter of Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. At Jenkins Couples and Family Therapy, we work with couples, families, and individuals walking with you through life's challenges and transitions. You can find out more about Jenkins Couples and Family Therapy and request an appointment through telehealth or in person at www.jenkinscft.com. Or by calling 859-806-0093.
And we are back. You are listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. I'm your host, Toby Jenkins. Today, my guest is Danielle Chesney, founder of Young Hearts Kentucky. And so, we've been talking through Danielle's experience of losing a parent. And the places where intervention would have been extremely helpful, and that's that's the hole that Danielle through Young Hearts Kentucky is looking to play in the role of children who lose a parent. You know, the other thing is kind of interesting about, well, there are many things that are interesting about this, is that losing a parent is probably more, happens more frequently than most of us probably think. Because, you know, we were talking before, just, you know, with my own dad, and if you talk about before 20, I think my mom's dad passed away before she was 20 as well. But in the lives of my children, they've had multiple classmates who have lost a parent. So statistically, annually in the United States, 1.5 million children will lose one or both parents, 1.5. Nationally, it's 1 in 7 before the age of 20. And then the state of Kentucky, it's 1 in 10. And so it didn't take me too long to go through my, you know, my social Rolodex of people I know, and then realize, holy cow, I do know quite a few people who've lost a parent, and as a teenager or younger. And so there's a tremendous opportunity for support for this community of young people. And so, you know, with that, schools would, from my perspective, might be a good place for intervention as well. Not only for, you know, we were talking earlier around the anger and then reintegrating back into school, and your peers don't know what to say to you. Your teachers may not know what to say to you or how to help. And so it can probably be pretty isolating at the same time. So there's a tremendous opportunity here to provide support and help. I imagine you're not surprised by these statistics, Danielle.
I'm not surprised. I believe that this happens often, you know, more often than we think. And, you know, I'm not surprised. I'm really not.
Yeah. And I guess the other wrinkle that I don't think we've touched on either, you know, on this end of COVID, there've been a lot of parents lost, and if not parents, caregivers, out of the, you know, 800,000 people who have died from COVID. So, that's probably going to bump those numbers we just talked about up quite a bit.
Yeah, it has actually. I've been doing research these past few weeks, and even a professor, Dr. Julie Zimmerman, who is at the University of Kentucky, her and I sat down and went over statistics and found the numbers, you know, increasing significantly. And, you know, with COVID and with other losses as well, cancer, other sicknesses, and on top of that, we also found that the number of grandparents that are raising their grandchildren, and, you know, these kids are losing their guardians, their grandparents, at a very young age. And so, you know, bereavement is something that I want to bring awareness to. This specific topic needs to be highlighted more in so many communities across, yes. I mean, across, over the, all around the world, but
true.
I think that this is so crucial, and it is happening so often, you know, around us every day. And, you know, one in 10 children in the state of Kentucky will experience the death of a parent or sibling by the age of 18. And, you know, the trauma of parental loss has been linked, you know, to several issues involving mental health and changes within the attachment styles, which mm-hmm. we have touched on in your class.
Of course.
Yes, the attachment styles, avoidant, anxious, and secure.
Yes,
the way one to go. Attachment style that is still yet to be discovered. I wrote a paper in college and stated that attachment styles are not just psychologically determined by the biology of the hidden workings of the brain, but that external factors related to trauma, social dynamic, and community play an equal part in the developmental process of attachment. And, you know, with that being said, it's community plays a huge role, and it is a contributing factor in the process of the development of a person. And, you know, children are also reticent to talk about the loss, which can lead to significant adverse mental health issues. And, you know, obviously, which I'm sure you are aware of, the clinical research that has been done that has documented links of early parental death and prolonged parental separations with depression and anxiety disorders. And, you know, this is my hope, is that this program and Young Hearts can touch the lives of these children. And specifically, I want to talk about how children are reticent, and that is research that has been documented, that children do not talk about the loss, and parents sometimes may not encourage that. Yep. And I talked to a grieving family recently, and they had stated that they didn't want their children to, you know, express their parents' loss, and that it's just expected that we just move on. And, I want to touch on that, because I think children need to talk about it and express themselves. And I can say that now from my personal experience, that not talking about the loss of my mom and not relating and understanding her death has, you know, contributed to some just issues within attachment. And just in kind of my early 20s, I'm a huge advocate for talking with your children about the loss.
Well, so, you know, along those lines, is there a right way to talk to children about a loss like that?
I don't think there's a right way, but I think talking about it gently with your child and emotionally providing for them during that process, asking them questions, bringing up the parent, letting them express themselves, expressing, you know, gymnastics. And I bring this back to the sport, because my floor routine was always expressing my personality and expressing who I am. And so I always chose floor music that really, I guess, brought my personality out. And that was my way of expressing myself through my floor routine and my music and dance. And
good.
I relate that to this. And, you know, children need to express themselves in a way. And if a parent can bring up, you know, memories of the parent and talk about, you know, how are you doing today?
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a long, serious conversation, but that the child knows that you are there for them and that they feel safe to come to the parent when, or the surviving parent or grandparents or any guardian at that point.
I think you're spot on. I don't work with as many children as I used to. And, you know, there are probably some rules of thumb when it comes to communicating with children that probably apply here too. And I would say the most important part is this is probably a Montessori concept, but follow the child. And so always be available. But with these kind of topics, take what they give you and don't force or push, but be open and available. Because one of the dangerous things with these kinds, you know, this kind of bereavement or this kind of loss is when things become, we don't talk about it or won't talk about it, it becomes unspeakable. And then when things become unspeakable, then we attach some type of shame or embarrassment to it because we can't talk about it. So the more psychological safety as a parent or an adult you can provide for a child going through something like this, I would say the better. Then the other thing I would say also to complement, you know, art and dance, like you talked about, is also amazing, but also like play. There's some fundamentals to play therapy that definitely work well with children who are going through the grief cycle, who may not be able to verbally express, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I'm going through, but they can express and get it out through their play. And that play may include some anger and some violence and all kinds of stuff. It's not always going to be flowers and unicorns when we're trying to process grief from loss. And so there are a lot of different ways to be there for children. And you don't have to be a trained expert to do these things. And it's okay, like you were saying earlier, to say, I don't know, and be okay with that. We're up against another break. My guest today is Danielle Chesney. She is the founder of Young Hearts Kentucky. And we're talking through how to support grieving children who've lost parents. We'll be right back after this break. This is Toby Jenkins, host of Paradigm Insights into Relationships and You, and this is Woman of Insight. You know, today I'm talking more about being in the sandwich generation. And in particular, over the last 2 years, COVID has really put a magnifying glass on the deficiencies in how we take care of the elderly, just in our country, in our culture. And so, if you don't have private insurance, which you acquired some time ago to make provisions for your long-term care, then care is really, really expensive. And what we're seeing more and more is that financial burden falls on the children. And so if you're an only child, that means it's you. If you're one of several, that means it's divided across siblings. And if in the case that there's some wealth that's been built up by that aging parent, it's through that wealth. But if we look at the aging generation, many do not have any accumulation of wealth. So it's extremely challenging for many families to take on this financial burden, this emotional burden, and the physical burden, especially if you are raising kids and taking care of your parents. This is Toby Jenkins, host of Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. One of the biggest stressors that we encounter is money. Money issues strain our family life, create stress in our relationships, and can provoke serious anxiety and depression. And many don't know where to turn to get relief. That's where the Darius Norman Show comes in. The Darius Norman Show airs daily on WTTA FM 101.2 from 1 to 2 p.m. Darius Norman is a certified credit and financial counselor and author of Rewriting Financial Rules. It's his objective to empower others with educational tools and services to assist them in taking control of their financial and credit issues. Tune in to the Darius Norman Show on WTTA FM 101.2, and you can follow him on Twitter at the Darius Norman Show. You're listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. I'm your host, Toby Jenkins. Today, I am honored to have my guest, Danielle Chesney, founder of Young Hearts Kentucky. And so, you know, today's topic's pretty heavy. And a lot of us, including myself, actually, as a therapist, doing grief work is not one of my favorite things. One of my colleagues, well, she's a friend of mine. She's also a psychologist, and that is her specialty. And she's been a former guest on this show, Janelle McNeil. She specializes in grief. And I asked her one day, how in the world do you work with clients through grief? That would just seem very difficult and just hard to do. And one thing she said to me was, well, first she said, well, how do you work with couples? Because that sounds like a slow death to me, right? And but her perspective on grief was similar to my perspective on working with couples, is that when she works with someone going through the grief process, she can see them being better and being in a position of being healed. And maybe healed's not the right words. I think when you lose someone you love, I don't know that you ever are healed, but you learn how to live with it. And that's probably my best reframing for how I look at working with grief, in that over time, that loss becomes smaller and smaller. Now, I've also seen, I'm sidetracking, an aspect of this where both clinically and just some of our friendships, I've seen people get stuck where, okay, it's been 20 something years and every conversation starts with, you know, my dad, or, you know, my mother would say, and that to me is an indication of someone being stuck and not having process to move through it. But, you know, there's some parts to the grieving cycle that are, well, I'd say they're normal in terms of how therapists think about it, but they're reminders. And some of those reminders are birthdays, holidays. What are some of the other reminders, Danielle, besides birthdays and holidays?
You know, death anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Anniversaries, I think, just small reminders for the seasons. Change seasons. I think that's, you know, hard times.
So in any type of significant family gatherings, interactions, favorite groups, you know, musicians, any of those kind of things can all bring that loss back to you like it happened yesterday. And so, and that's a normal part of the grieving cycle. I was actually, gosh, I'm going to spend so much time talking about my dad through this thing. But when my dad lost, when my dad lost his mother, and my grandmother, his mother lived to be 90 something. He visited her gravesite quite often. And I had never seen that kind of behavior from him. And he would talk about her. He would say, I'm going to visit Ma. Now, by the way, this is like a 3-hour drive. And so he would go drive to Charleston, do some other stuff, but made sure he stopped by and visited the gravesite of his mother. And then he'd come back. And he oftentimes do that in the same day. And so that grieving process, some of that is included in the grieving process, and that's perfectly normal to go to that gravesite, visit the gravesite, especially on anniversaries, holidays, and those kind of things. So, so you remember your mom's anniversary of her passing. And even today, how does that affect you?
Yeah, so her death anniversary is in September. And so when first, I would say about 6 years, the whole month of September was very challenging, just bringing back a lot of emotions and memories, locations, hospitals, just, you know, smells, all of those things that are related to grief. I remember that September was a very difficult month for several years. And I can honestly say now at 28 that it doesn't affect me the same way that it did. And now I'm able to go through the month of September, and it is hard and it is challenging, but you know what? At the end of the day, it's where I'm at in my life now that it's actually a beautiful thing to see that her passing in September is a reminder to me of who she was as a person, and to celebrate her legacy and what she brought to this world, community, love, and support. Very involved with our community in California, and just remembering those memories. You know, the first years are really hard, but I think as time goes on, it used to frustrate me when people would say that it gets easier with time.
Really?
It did. It frustrated me so much. I'm not sure that it gets easier. I believe that I'm able to handle it more effectively.
Yeah, good. Really good. So you've developed a mentoring relationship with a special young person, Dean. How did you meet Dean, and what is your relationship with Dean?
I met Dean through a mutual friend and another professor of mine at UK, and they had connected our stories together. He lost his mom last year to cancer. Oh, and wow. they felt that he needed some support and some mentorship. And, you know, I can be very honest. At first, I wasn't sure that I was able to express my own grief. So I began with action with him, and I began doing activities with him. And that was kind of the start of our relationship. And soon after, about a couple of months into our mentorship connection, I began asking him questions about the loss of his mom.
Oh, wow. How familiar was his story of losing his mom to yours?
Well, interesting you ask that, because, you know, actually, what really truly happened was that this connection forced me to process the loss of my mom and process. Yeah. And so I was able to process her passing and relate it to Dean's story. Mm-hmm. And yes, there were a lot of similarities with the way that he expresses his grief. Is very similar to how I did as well. So, you know, our connection is incredibly strong, and, you know, he inspired me. This story inspired me to start Young Hearts, and that this has been a dream of mine. And, you know, this past year was very challenging for me personally, as well as, you know, my career. And he inspired me to start this program, Young Hearts.
Wow. Now, how old is Dean?
Dean is 11 years old.
Oh, wow. 11 and lost his mother to cancer. Mm.
Yes.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Very, very cool. And so I can imagine, you know, there's some things that are unspoken about connections, and sometimes you just know. And so my guess is that you probably didn't have to tell Dean that you lost your mother, but you probably know what he's going through, which is super awesome.
Yeah. You know, like I said, this situation and this connection has, you know, again, forced me to reflect on the loss of my mom. And I watch him grieve in many different ways. I watch him express his grief. And, but you know what? Sometimes it isn't about us talking. It isn't about me bringing up his mom. Sometimes it's just, and this is why I'm very passionate when it comes to talking to or just relating to children. Sometimes it doesn't have to be asking them questions.
Yes.
Sometimes it can just be watching a movie and connecting, right?
Yes.
Connection is so incredibly important. And there is a delay in the development of a person who experiences trauma. There is such a delay. And this connection and peer support and mentorship are crucial. And yeah. I believe it.
No, I completely agree. And it kind of goes back to, sounds like you are doing what I would say, follow the child, which is every time you get together, it doesn't have to be, all right, tell me about your mother. Tell me about, I mean, right. It can be, hey, let's play Pokemon. And
that's right. We ride our bikes to McGee's Bakery.
Yeah.
And and we just do activities together. And that is my way of showing him that I am emotionally there for him.
Yeah, that's super. And that's a great example. Well, we're up against another break. My guest today is Danielle Chesney. She's the founder of Young Hearts Kentucky. And we're going to talk more about Young Hearts after the break. We'll be right back.
You've got mail. You've got mail.
Today's listener mail comes from Concerned Mom. I am deeply concerned about the relationship my 19-year-old son is in. He has historically had decent girlfriends during high school, but he met his current girlfriend at college, and he isn't even the same person anymore. She clearly emotionally manipulates him. She's disrespectful to my husband and I. She slowly turned our son against us. It makes my skin crawl even to be around her. What should my husband and I do to end this relationship? So, Danielle, this is a sticky one. And all right, I'm going to put you on the spot. What would you say to Concerned Mom?
So the first thing that I would do is have an open discussion with my spouse. And have open communication with them and talk about it amongst ourselves and figure out how both of us are feeling first. It's really important that the parents are on the same page and respect one another and can offer each other support and guidance. Secondly, I believe that sitting down with the child and also having a very open and honest discussion with them can really play an important role in that process, letting the child speak, letting them hear your side of the story. Mm-hmm. It's a sticky situation because helicopter parenting.
Yep.
Yes. I believe that is, will push the child away.
Yes.
And they will refuse to listen.
So you would recommend that the parents get on the same page and have an open conversation with their 19-year-old son about their thoughts and feelings about the relationship the son's in. What theory applies for that? Just kidding.
I'm trying to remember what theory in your class really am trying to remember.
Let's say the husband and wife are on the same page with ending that relationship, would you encourage the parents to tell their child to get out of this relationship?
I do not believe that they should tell them to get out of the relationship. Mm-hmm. Okay. It really pushes away children, especially at that age. It really pushes them away. And they're just going to rebel and they're going to say, I'm going to prove you wrong, mom and dad. I'm going to show you that she's a great person. But you know, if they're 19, maybe, and I don't, you know, obviously don't know the situation, but maybe they'll go off to college and they'll start to mature and kind of recognize the relationship, how the relationship is going.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And so I agree with you quite a bit, especially if we're talking about someone who's an adult, young adult, that as a parent, you don't have as much influence on those kind of decisions. And anything you do as a parent to try to drive a wedge or use your power to end this relationship, I've seen that. You know, I've seen parents pull away the financial support. I've seen them pull away any type of leverage they have to try to punish that child for this relationship they're in. And ultimately, all it really does is drive your child closer to that partner they're with in this relationship. And so I hate to say it, we have to acknowledge that at that point in our children's lives, we don't have that much power and influence over them. And as a parent, you have to play the long game. And so if this relationship does continue, then what kind of relationship do you want to have with your child and your child's partner? The other thing, as I say, I use kind of neutral terms, because you often see this when your child is dating. If you have whatever ism, someone that's in that ism, whether it be gay, lesbian, trans, different culture, different race, you often see that too. And so I'd encourage concerned mom to play the long game and be the adult and think about the kind of relationship you want to have with your child and their partner if this relationship continues.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back with more Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You with Toby Jenkins.
And we are back. You are listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. You know, I've said probably a couple times that this is a heavy topic, and you know, the losing a parent, it's definitely more difficult when you're young. I'm blessed and fortunate to still have both of mine, and I know that day is coming for me too, to bury both my parents. It's something that we all, this is going to sound dark, but if we're fortunate enough, that we're going to have to do. So we've been touching on through all of this, the particular challenge of losing a parent when you are young. And so, and this is where Young Hearts is going to step in and support young people from a mentorship support, professionals help when they lose parents. So it is amazing, Danielle, that this organization has come out of your passion and your own experience. So, you know, as you look to the future, and I know you're just starting and you've just founded this, so where do you see Young Hearts going and growing out over the next couple of years?
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, we are just now starting. So a lot of this is figuring out what is going to benefit the children, as well as what we can do for our community and for these surviving parents or guardians. And so, you know, I've just now been starting to envision what Young Hearts will be, but I hope that in the future, Young Hearts grows throughout the nation and in other states and other cities for these families and children. I also envision Young Hearts to become a club or an organization on college campuses, because it is.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yes. And I'm sure as a professor at the University of Kentucky, you can relate to that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we focused a lot of our discussion on younger children who lose a parent. But, you know, just statistically, the percentage goes up as we get older. And so, now that you mentioned that, in the 4 or 5 years that I taught at Kentucky, I had at least three or four students who lost a parent during the semester that I taught them. And my wife also is an academic, and I know she's had multiple students who've lost a parent. And so it's, yeah, definitely a need on college campuses for sure. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe that I would have benefited from a program like this at UK. I believe that coming into college and not having that guidance from your parent, or entering in a new stage of your life, would be so beneficial to have that peer support amongst, you know, college kids, peers.
Yeah. Sure.
And, you know, this can be for college students who've lost a parent during college, and this can be for college students who are entering college who have experienced early parental loss. So I do envision that. And ultimately, I hope that this program can benefit children. And more importantly, you know, I know we've touched on attachment styles. I'm very passionate on attachment theory. Avoidant, anxious, and secure. I want these children to have. Thank you for all your knowledge.
You're such a nerd. I tell you, talk about attachment styles. No way.
Who's avoidant? Who is anxious? And who's secure? Because
yes,
I think, you know, more importantly, I do want to express this, that children, I want these children to have secure relationships in their adolescent years and moving on. I want them to feel secure.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's a very good plug for attachment theory. I'm a huge attachment theory fan. And that's actually a framework I use in therapy with clients who have lost a parent. And I would say the best way I've seen it and to frame it is that when you've lost a parent, then it can feel like any relationship you get into, you could lose them too. So then that can make you very avoidant. Either you will avoid getting too close, because if I get too close, I'll lose them and that's going to hurt me. Or you get really anxious, where when this person's out of my sight, oh no, they're not coming back. So I've seen both. So I'm an attachment nerd too. Yeah,
I am as well. And I think avoidant personality is a contributing factor, is neglect. Mm-hmm. And not having the right emotional support as a child. And I'm very interested in that. So.
It is. And as you bring that up, like, you know, from an approach standpoint for therapy, and I'll make a plug for marriage and family therapists, a good way to help repair some of these kind of damaged bonds is through working with whole networks. So people you're in a relationship or your family, so that you can develop security in the relationship or how you interact to help counteract that avoidant or anxiousness. And so there are all kinds of responses you typically get from either one of those. So then just going through the process of in your relationships, I know this person is being avoidant, but let's stay there and let's be reassuring in our language, in our body language, in our presence. And that's how we work through those kind of attachment wounds in a therapy process with family and significant others. So attachment can be a very useful therapy tool to work with children and adults who have losses like this and attachment wounds, for sure. That's cool. So, I do want to touch on, and you know, I want to emphasize too, that as a new nonprofit, there's always a need for resources, both financial and others. So what kind of, like, let's start with non-monetary resources. What kind of help are you looking for with Young Hearts?
So from the community, we are looking for board members and more board members and volunteers, mentors. We are looking for individuals who have experienced the loss of a parent, early parental loss, and, you know, really talking about Young Hearts and bringing awareness to the bereaved children in our community. I believe that that is really important. And so right now we are in the process, as, you know, the board members and I, we are discussing ways to really get started with the mentorship process. So Young Hearts will place a mentor with a mentee, and that is any individual above, we actually agreed junior and senior year of college and above. So anyone above, you know, their junior and senior year of college who has lost a parent can mentor with Young Hearts, and we will place them with a child who has lost a parent. Similar stories, you know, similar age, we want to highlight that and highlight the importance of that. And we will host and hold two support or peer support events twice a month. And these events will allow the peers to come together who lost a parent, and we will do activities such as Keeneland, UK basketball, football games, dinners, holiday events, parties, things like that for the kids to express their grief with one another.
Nice.
Lastly, so we have peer support, we're going to have mentorship, and the connection part is just really just hosting events for anyone, our volunteers, mentors, for everyone to come together as a community.
Awesome. So I know if you're talking, this sounds a lot like, sounds a lot like Big Brothers, Big Sisters and how their mentorship is structured. So I'd imagine these volunteers need to pass some type of background check, probably state and federal too.
Absolutely. So that is something that we will require is a state and federal background check for all volunteers, mentors, as well as board members for just the safety of our children.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And so we, you know, that is very crucial to this part. And we want to make sure that our children are safe.
Yeah, absolutely. So now how can people donate financially to Young Hearts? And where can they find you on the web, et cetera?
Yeah, so you can visit our website at www.youngheartskentucky.org. And you can email me at Danielle Marie at youngheartsky.com. And how you can donate is by visiting our website, and we are offering, you know, any amount will help our, you know, help this cause, any amount. We, you know, we are just now starting, but, you know, with the help of our community, the Lexington community, we can create this nonprofit with dedicated expertise and resources to further expand our reach. And, you know, like I said, Young Hearts believes that every bereaved child deserves to have a safe place to grieve. And that's through connection, peer support, and mentorship. So if, any donations, and we actually have an event, a fundraiser coming up with Kendra Scott that is coming up on December 17th. So all sales, all 20% of all sales will benefit Young Hearts, and that is the start. And so we are really excited about that. And then you can also donate a heart in memory of a loved one. So you can choose $10, I believe it's 10, 20, 50, and 100, I believe. And you can write a loved one's name, and you can donate a heart to Young Hearts.
Very cool. I like it. Well, Danielle, this has been awesome, and I'm really excited for the work that you are doing with young people and serving this need, because it's a pretty big need. And so, So, you know, I always end up saying this, if we've helped one person, especially someone that heard this and can step in the gap and help a child work through their grief, then our time has been well worth it. So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It has been an honor being here with you. And thank you so much for all that you have done in my life as academically and as an individual. So thank you.
Wow. Thank you. And I can't wait to see what you do with Young Hearts Kentucky. You've been listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. I'm your host, Toby Jenkins. And today, my guest, founder and president of Young Hearts Kentucky, Danielle Chesney. We'll see you next week.
If you have a relationship therapy or personal growth question you would like answered on the air, email me at toby@paradigmradioshow.com. You can find archive shows and additional details about guests of the show at the show's website, www.paradigmradioshow.com. You can follow weekly 1 minute insight posts on the show's Instagram and Twitter feed at Paradigm Radio Show. For archived episodes, you can find episodes wherever you subscribe to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You, is brought to you by Jenkins Professional Services and Hype Media Global.
Thank you for tuning into Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You with Toby Jenkins. Join us again.